Okay. Now, after that, it is my privilege to introduce to you guys tonight's speaker. Her name is Ursula. And I know a lot of the girls that she associates with, and I think one of her big qualities that I attribute to her is helping other alcoholics, and for that she should get like a 8 out of 10. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Ursula. Welcome to the Ice House, right? Can you hear me?
No.
Can you hear me now? Whoa, that's a little loud. Yeah, hello? Can you hear me now? Let's see. So, I'm like a lot of you. You know, I see a lot of people that are in homes, and I see a lot of familiar faces, and, you know, we share common bonds, you know, and I have been clean and sober for over a year and been blessed with a... I've been blessed with a new life and a new relationship with God and been set on a completely different footing, you know, and I'll tell you how it all started. Well, you know what? I was different from the very beginning, from when I was like 15, when I started putting stuff in my body, I had a different reaction. You know, like I instantly just fell in love, or just, you know, as soon as I started to drink, and put other things in my body, that was it, you know, like it was pretty quick with me. My life went from normal to interventions and family crises and running away and, you know, it just went just like that, pretty much overnight, very quickly. I started out in my first treatment center at 17 years old. I probably had like 3 interventions prior to that with my family. You know, they would slip me away. I was just telling my daughter yesterday how when I was her age, you know, they would like trap me in the car and like pull the door in and not, you know, trying to get me out of town so they could get me out of town so then they could send me on a plane and ship me off somewhere, you know, in some treatment center. And that's what my childhood was like. And I always knew from the beginning that I was different. You know, I remember going to meetings as a kid, as a teenager, knowing that I was different and that it was like I was doomed already from the beginning. But I kept going back out and kept trying, you know, kept trying to be normal or kept trying to think that I was, you know, this time was going to be different. And that just started like a whole like I have this big long resume of rehabs that I've went to. You know, I went to New Visions 3 times. I went to Mothering Heights twice. I went to New Heights like probably 10 times. You know, I did drug court. I was like I was in the first class to graduate, and I was like the second most successful person to graduate from drug court when it started. You know, and I felt like I was important, like I had arrived then. And, you know, but it didn't teach me anything. I still knew I was different, and I would still go to the meetings, and I would still agree with the fact that I was sick, and I was like them, and yet I would get going a little bit in life, and then I would be in that delusional state of this time's going to be different, you know, every single time. This disease has, you know, taken me to places that I swore I would never go. You know, I lost custody of my oldest daughter when she was 3, and I didn't have her in my life for 13 years. And I almost lost custody of my other daughter. You know, I drug her through my disease. I made a lot of bad choices, you know. Once I started getting loaded and, you know, partying and everything, like, my family that I was brought into and how I was brought up. You know, I found a new family in this, you know, and on the streets. You know, I felt like I was like in this gang family because like my ex-husband was, you know, part of this big gang, and like, so this was my new family. And so I adapted to my circumstances, you know, the best that I could. And here I was just like prison wife, and I was involved with all these, you know, this gang activity, and that was my new family, and I was good with that, you know. And I, as I was going through my partying and out there running amok, I would make little short trips into treatment. You know, I'd go in and I'd go to New Visions and I'd go for 90 days or 6 months, and then I'd start getting things back, and my family always wanted to help me, you know, and I'd get a car and I'd get a job or whatever, and then I would be, you know, I'd be right back out again before you know it. And, you know, it seems like every time that I would come into recovery, like I really had a true desire to stop or want to stop, you know, like I felt like my parents taught me better. Like I didn't want to live like that, you know, but I just kept doing it. I kept on, I kept going back. It was like insanity. Like I was literally, I was such a revolving door. And you know, many people that have been here that have seen me come in and out and in and out, and you know, and the crazy thing is that I was completely in this delusional state that I had it all together. And you know, that this time was going to be different. And I mean, like, seriously, I would look at them and I would think that they would see this, like, change in me and this light, like everything was different. And then there I was, you know, back at it, like nothing, you know, in just a short amount of time. At one point I got, I had put together on my own will, I guess, 4 years. And, you know, I was like sponsor of the year, so I thought. And, you know, what I really did is I became a workaholic during those 4 years, and I got this great job, and I just threw myself into my job. And, you know, I always believed in God. And I was going to church and volunteering in the playroom and doing all this stuff. And I thought I was good to go. I really did. I thought that, you know, I had finally achieved sobriety, and I had finally made it. And I was like, I had years, you know, like I was finally grounded. And then there I was, you know, on that Friday afternoon when the obsession returned, and I was completely defenseless, you know, and I was at a meeting talking to my sponsor, and yet nothing could change that obsession. I wanted to pick up, and there's nothing that anybody could say or do. I've never been able to play the tape through. I've never been able to call someone and have them tell me, you shouldn't pick up, you know, you should do, you know, I've never been able to do that. That's something that even with so many years away from it, that once the obsession, when it returns with me, I'm completely powerless over it. And, you know, I felt really guilty about that for a lot of years, because I have all these friends in recovery who have like multiple years, like 20 years, 15 years, and they would look at me and I would feel so like broken, you know, because they'd be like, why can't you get it together? Like, why can't you do it? What's going on? Ursula, you know, what about your kids? And like all this stuff, right? So I would continuously feel guilty, but you know, they always say, keep coming back, you know. And so there I would go again, dragging myself in, throwing myself in detox. I got to the point where I could see the red flags all around me, right? CPS at the door, the eviction notice. And then I would just be like, all right, I'll just check myself into treatment and I'll be good. And I'd be using, or drinking, excuse me, I would, you know, I would be doing that and going to treatment, but so I'm looking like I'm manipulating the system, because look over here, see, I'm trying to get help, but I'm still doing my thing over here. And it was like I was playing this, like, this front, you know, and I was really sick. And that went on for a long time. And when I got those 4 years, I really learned how to live. Like finally I had arrived in life, and I kind of stepped back from the whole gang scene, you know, went through a divorce. Like I had stepped back out of that lifestyle that I was living for so long, and now I was like a citizen, to where I could pay my bills, and I could, you know, I could keep custody of my child. I could, I always felt like if I could be functioning and staying loaded, that I would do that, you know. And And the truth is, that was just harder. And that was sicker. You know, it was a lot easier when I would run the streets and be homeless or being, like, living in a mission. Like, that was easier for me than, like, trying to pull it all together and pay my bills and, you know, and feed my disease. And that was a lot harder for me, you know, watching, you know, trying to raise my daughter and feed my disease at the same time was super hard. And anyway, so I did that one on for a while, and I went back and forth in and out of treatment, and you know, that was probably the sickest time in my life, really. I never felt more alone than when I was trying to hold it all together with all these outer conditions of my life, you know, and keep all that together and still be able to feed my disease over here. That was what was the hardest part. I wanted to let go. I had to let go of one. It's like I was standing there, like in this battle, like I had to either let go of my life or feed my disease, but I just couldn't sit there and do both. Like, it was killing me inside. And yet I would still go and, you know, try to seek help and try to fix myself. I would try everything. Like, I tried everything. I would take all these suggestions. Like, I would, you know, I had this great sponsor. Like, I would do whatever they told me to do. Stay out of a relationship for a year. I did it. You know what I mean? I tried it. I tried to move. That didn't work. I tried everything. Like, that I felt like I really had tried everything. And, you know, I got to this place where I was just, like, so broken and so disconnected from everyone. You know, I remember calling my grandma and being like, you just need to check me into the mental hospital. Like, I don't know what to do with me. Like, seriously, like, I'm done. Like, it doesn't work. The meetings don't work. That doesn't work. This doesn't work. Like, the antidepressants don't work. The drugs don't work. The alcohol doesn't work. Nothing works. The relationship doesn't work. Like, nothing is working. Like, I am dying inside and something is wrong with me. And I don't know what to do. And I was at this place where nothing worked, you know. And I remember throwing myself down on the floor in my bathroom and crying out to God, you know, who I believed in and thought I had this relationship with. And I just cried out to him with every bit of my soul and asked him to do something for me. I can't do it. You're going to have to do it. If you want me to be right, you're going to have to do this for me because I can't do it anymore. Like, I'm just at my wit's end. I just can't do it. I can't live anymore. You know, I was just done. And he must have heard my cry that day or something. You know, and I felt like I had cried that before, but maybe it was just in a different place. You know, that was the gift of desperation that God gave me, and it put me in a place where I remember going through one day, calling out, I was just bad, right? I was horrible, and I was off, and my mind was crazy, and I start going through my phone list, and I start calling all you guys, and you know, and like people, they were like in the big book, it talks about how like, there's this little group, like in the doctor talks about how there are these people off to the side that he doesn't know what to do with. Like he tells me, like this doctor in the big book, he's like running the big alcohol treatment center, right, across, you know, for America or whatever. And he's like the doctor to go to if you have a problem. And then he's like, here's these people over here, we don't know what to do with them. Like that's me. Like I was calling Michelle in New Vision saying, I need help. And she's like, Ursula, I don't know what to do with you. Like, really? Like, what do you do when the people that you're supposed to go to don't know what they can do for you, you know? And that was, like, that was kind of scary, you know? And when I was calling my support group, and they're like, we don't know how to help you. They were done. They had their day with me. But that's okay because I had I had made a phone call, and a guy that had came to my house to make an amends to me, like a week prior, he came to make this amends to me, and I could have sworn that he had already made the amends, right? He's doing great, he's doing this well, he's like, comes to make this amends, I'm like, you already made the amends, and he's like, oh no, I just want to make sure. Well, anyways, I ended up having his phone number because he had just came to make this amends. So I go through my whole phone list, right, nobody wants to have anything to do with me, and I call him, and him and his girlfriend, they came and picked me up on just the 4th of July. Nobody wanted to come, you know, on their 4th of July. They came and picked me up, and, you know, they had a different twist on recovery that I had never heard before, you know, and it, it kind of like made my ears perk up, you know, because they weren't telling me, like, why can't you do this? Like, look at your kids or look at this. It was like, we understand where you are, you know, and let's see, you know, we understand where you are and let's see what we can do to help you and to get from point A to point B. Well, that lady ended up, she ended up being my sponsor. And after I cried out to God and really abandoned myself in this desperate place, right, of like spiritual death is what I look back on, because I couldn't, you know, it didn't matter what was going on around me. Like spiritually, I was dead. God removed the obsession from me that day and set me on a new footing. And, you know, He put this woman in my life. She came over and she started working the steps with me. And I've worked the steps, mind you, lots of times. Lots of different ways. And I've taken people through the steps. But this was different, you know. We went through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she would come over and she would sit down with me every week and read with me and take me through like she cared, you know, like it was a life or death errand. Like it really mattered, you know, and that was so amazing, you know. I wouldn't miss my time or my sessions with my sponsor for anything, you know. I wouldn't miss church on Sunday and I wouldn't miss Tuesday night with my sponsor. And she took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and she took me through the steps, the way that it's lined out, the way that Bill did it back in the day when they had a 75% success rate. And I am telling you, like, I was really upset after, I mean, I was grateful, don't get me wrong. I was a little bitter because I had been around these rooms for so long, and I had never been shown the 12 steps like that. You know, and I'd never had that. You know, and now I can look at it and think, well, maybe, you know, maybe when the, you know, they say that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. You know, I got to go through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got to have an experience with it, you know. I got to learn about my condition. I got to learn that I was, you know, allergic to this stuff. That all these things that I had been filled with all these years and all these treatment centers, all this stuff over and over, all this human aid that they would pump into us over and over about doing this and doing that and all these positive affirmations, they were never going to work for me because I'm allergic to it. And I'm delusional, you know, and it just gave me a completely different twist on it, you know, and it gave me a new experience. We would always say this prayer at the beginning when we would sit down to work together, and it was a set-aside prayer, you know? We'd ask God to come in and set aside any ideas that we had about the book, about 12 steps, about God, you know, and ask for God to show us the truth, you know? And I got this new experience with going through the steps, and I got this new experience with my life and myself. And I got to see how powerless I was. You know, I stayed on step one for months. You know, I've never done that before. I would just push right through. I can look at my life and say, I know how unmanageable it is. I can see that. But when I stayed in step one for so long and I got to see really how I had no power and how I'm fighting this deadly disease that I can't battle alone, that I'm not going to be able to think my way out of, that you're not going to be able to talk me out of it. You know, the thing about alcoholics and addicts is like, we can go from literally from like almost losing our life or committing suicide to a week later thinking that this time it's going to be different. Or this time I'm just going to do this. Like in the book it talks about one of the guys he's talking about, this time I'm going to have a glass of whiskey with maybe just, you know, with my cup of milk, right? Like this time it's just going to be like that. This time I'm just going to take a Tramadol. You know, this time it's going to be this way. I don't have a problem. You know, it's going to be different. But yet the week prior, I could be in a straitjacket at Cyprus, you know? And then like 1 week later, we're thinking, we're in this delusional state that somehow it's going to be different, you know? And there was some freedom there by going through the big book and having this lady tell me and talk to me about my disease that I didn't have any power there. There was freedom there. Because, I mean, here I thought I was walking around feeling guilty because I wasn't able to pull it off. Because I kept ending up in new visions. Because I kept ending up all screwed up. And it was like, wait a minute, I'm just like Bill. Because Bill couldn't pull it off either. You know, and it wasn't until Bill in the big book had a spiritual experience with God that he was able to stay sober. You know, and it wasn't until I had a spiritual experience with God that I wasn't able to stay sober. You know, the thing is, the scary part is that I was really in a delusion thinking I had a relationship with God and that I had this program go down. So today, because, I mean, we can get delusional now, right? I can get delusional today. It's like, I don't want to be in that delusional place. I don't ever want to be in that place where I think that I'm good, you know, or that I know it all, or that I've seen it all. Like, there's a healthy fear there for myself that I always want to stay connected to God, you know? God is what this whole, you know, like, okay, the biggest kept secret in AA is God. You know, I was hitting all the dances and the horseshoe tournaments and all this stuff, and I had the trophy sponsor, and I was hitting all the meetings, you know, 90 and 90, I was doing all that stuff, but I didn't grasp this whole thing that if I don't get this relationship with God, if I don't get this relationship with God to where I can actually access His power and allow Him to move in my life and transmit that power, then I'm doomed, you know, and I didn't get that. I thought, gosh, I feel good. I'm sober and clean. I've got things going on. Like, I'm walking around like everything's okay. But really, like, I'm dying inside spiritually, and I never realized it. I never had anybody sit there and pull me aside and really take the time to look at my condition to see really what's wrong with me. You know, I learned a lot about my ego. I learned a lot about my vanity. You know, I learned a lot about me and my selfishness and self-centeredness. I mean, I can look at when I was out there partying, how selfish and self-centered I was. It was all about me, all the time. More, 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 more. Me, him, money, whatever. That's how it was for me. But when I step back and I take a look at those 4 years that I was sober, how selfish and self-centered I was in recovery, how I was a workaholic now, and it's still about me, and it was still about him, and it was still about my vanity, and it was still about money, and that even though I believed in God, that I wasn't living for God, that I wasn't serving God, that I wasn't out there like working with you, like your life depended upon it, like if I'm your sponsor, I'm doing it because I'm the one to look good, because I'm the, you know, that's what my ego says. You know, so today, so here I am today trying to stay on this footing with God, you know, keeping this connection with God, wanting to serve Him completely with all my heart and soul so that I can stay connected, you know, and it's like setting aside any personal differences from the past. I wasn't able to do that before, you know? And the crazy thing is that I couldn't even see it because my life from the outside, man, I had a straight job, I was good, I had, you know, all my sobriety friends, they thought she's finally got it. But really, I didn't. I really hadn't gotten it. It just, you know, I just really switched it from over here to over here. You know, more on Ursula's self-will. You know, there's a beautiful gift that we get to see when we go through the work and of the 12 steps. And, you know, the way, I can't say enough about, I'm a little prejudiced to going through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous the way that I was because I had such a great experience with it. Not only that, but I went through so many other times, so many different ways, never had even close to the same experience that I had by going through line by line, just like they did back in the day, back in 1935. So for me, I'm a little bit, you know, I'm partial to that way because I never had that experience before, you know, and I never was excited to sit down and do step work with my sponsor. I never sat there and just had these God-shot moments where I'm just crying, like, you know, uncontrollably because here my Creator is talking to me loudly and clearly and walking me through this step work and walking me through my life, and I'm getting to see how powerless I, you know, that I am. I never had that before, you know? Maybe other people have had it. Maybe it just wasn't my time. But I can tell you right now that when, you know, even then, look, like, I started to go through the work, and about 6 months later, so I'm totally clear. I'm getting clear, right? I'm going through every week with my sponsor, and I'm knowing that I'm dying from this fatal disease that I have no control over, that I have a physical craving that I can't control, that once I stick it in my body, it's just like if I'm allergic to penicillin. If I take the penicillin, you can't say, gosh, you're supposed to stop having a reaction. Like, I can't stop it. Like, once I put it in my body, I don't have any control over what happens after that point. So once I stick it in my body, I can't stop for my kids. Once I stick it in my body, I can't stop for him. I can't stop for my job because I can't control it. It's like sitting there with somebody telling them who has cancer, you know, why don't you just stop having cancer? You know, and when I look at this disease and my disease, that's the way it really was for me. I would look at people, it got so freeing to look at this thing like, oh my gosh, this is a deadly disease that I don't have any control over. Because I wouldn't have any control over if I had cancer or not. I would just have cancer. And so, having that new experience with understanding that I have this allergic reaction and I don't have any more power over that craving than I do the obsession, you know, and see, there's a lot of people don't share that experience with me. A lot of people can play the take through. A lot of people can have that obsession return, and they can go to a meeting and maybe it's returned. But that's not how it is for me. I have to keep that relationship with God constant, because never have I been able to fight the mental obsession on human power. You know, I've never had that experience. You know, and you know, I did have a lot of people in my life who have had the experience that was different than that, and they would try to tell me, you know, well, why don't you just go to a meeting? Well, I did. It didn't work, you know. I remember when once that obsession is returned, there's no human power that can change it for me. You know, it's got to be God. It's the only thing that can remove it, you know, and I'm grateful for all my relapses now, you know, because God gets to use those. I get to use, or, you know, He uses those in my life today with the women that I work with. I was real bitter about my last relapse because it was for like a week, and I was a little bit bitter about it, but then once I got to sit across somebody else who had the same experience, and I realized that God was doing, you know, using my experience one more time to be able to help somebody else. What a gift, you know? Everything I went through in my life, and all the treatment centers, and all the dysfunction, and losing my child, and everything, you know, today to be able to be used as a vessel of God, you know, and to be out there on the front lines, you know, really trying to help people and really wanting to do God's work. Because it's a deadly disease. It really, truly is. And it wasn't until I got really clear that, you know, that I wasn't willing to do it. I mean, if you're fighting for, okay, just like cancer has stage 4, stage 3, stage 2, I believe I'm stage 4 right here. And so when I'm fighting for my life and I'm willing to do anything, you're going to do anything. I mean, if you've got stage 4 cancer, you're going to be down there at the hospital. You're going to be doing whatever the doctor tells you. You're going to be doing it every single day. You're going to do whatever they tell you to do. And in the end, it was like, for me, I've come to the conclusion that I'm going to die from this disease, stage 4. I better do it. I better do it every day. I better find the solution, seek it with all my heart, right? I'm so grateful for the 12 steps. I can't say enough about having the new experience with going through the big book, you know? I know that I did slip out, you know, a few times, you know, I'm trying to be respectful, but, you know, I have other issues. And so for me having other issues, to find my solution in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is a gift. You know, and to be able to share that with other people who are like me, who have other issues, to be able to take them through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is a gift. You know, and sometimes when God closes doors, He closes them because He's going to open up new ones, you know. And I was bitter about those doors that were closed for a while, you know. I was bitter about some people that didn't want to help me in my life. And, you know, but God had a different plan, and He put the people in my life, you know. And my home group for my first year was the PPG, you know, and I got to study the book, like, very intensely with a group of people who were very intense about the book and about the process, and I can't say enough about it. I mean, it was a beautiful experience. It was great studying that book. I mean, God, I don't know about you, but when I was out there doing my thing, I was with the intense people doing my thing, you know, whether it was drinking or other things. Like, I ran with the worst of the worst. So when I came in here, I felt like, you know, for me to be over there intensely reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and going through the process was exactly where I needed to be, you know. And truly blessed that God has brought me, you know, to where I'm at today, and I'm able to share the experience and to be able to transmit something that I do have, right? You know, it's really cool to be able to be clear on your condition and to look across from somebody who is dying just like I was, and who's sitting there and they're suffering and they don't understand why they can't pull it together or why they can't stay straight, and everybody around them is telling them, why don't you do it for this, or why can't you pull it together? And it's really cool to be able to say, hey, check it out, you don't got the power to. You don't have the power to do it for your kid. And to be able to give that to somebody else and for them to feel that freedom, that's a gift, you know, and I'm so grateful that God has given me a new life and a clear understanding of what the 12 steps and the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's all a God thing, you know, it's really all a relationship with God. That's where it is for me, and that's what I've been blessed with. Thanks for letting me share.
All right.
Thank you.